right, we're going to start our blogger panel here. So I don't know if anybody's had a chance to give Kevin Lee a round of applause for putting on a great event for the second year in a row. But he's basically a committee on one on this thing, trying to get a bunch of sheep together. So he's done a pretty good job, and way to go, Kevin. So we've got five panel members here today. Callum was not able to make it from Silver Sevens, so we have a replacement. Many people might know who it is. It's Adnan, or at Sens Adnan. That's not nice. He's here. He's subbing in. He's here for your entertainment. All right. Next we have David, which is at Pan of SCU. He's a podcaster at Sens Call-Ups is the name of the podcast. And we'll get to, I don't know what he thinks about things. We'll find that out later. Next, of course, we have Kevin. Another round of applause for putting us out here. Selling us out. Yeah? Okay, thanks. And Kevin, your Twitter handle is what? At Bring Back Lee, right? Okay, so follow him if you don't. Although, given that you're here, I'm betting that you follow him. Next, we have like a ghost. Like becoming an increasingly bad anonymous Twitter person is Sens Chirp, and that's at Sens Chirp, so follow him if you don't, but I'm betting that you do. And last we have Joe from Bonk's Mullet, which is at McElwain's World, right? Yeah, oh good, very good. Fan section from his co-Bonk's Mullet-ite person, whatever they are. Okay. So I'm going to just, we're going to go through the panel here. The way we're going to do it is, other than for the first question, I'm going to put the question to one of the panel members. They're going to answer the question, and then we'll have a bit of a free-for-all, basically election-style debate, although it's not necessarily intended to be a debate, but that's how we'll handle it, just to try to get through as many questions as we can. I don't know that we'll have time, but if we do, you can tweet out some more questions with the hashtag AskASensBlogger. And we'll put that out to the panel if I find my phone. All right, so the first question is just, we've introduced you, but introduce yourself again and let us know why and when you became a blogger or podcaster in the case of Dave.
So I'm Adnan.
Boo!
Boo! I will boo myself. I became a blogger somewhere, I think in the 2010-2011 season, when the Senators were having a horrible season. And as you know, I like bitching about things, so.
Speak up.
I became a blogger in the 2010-2011 season when the Senators were having a horrible season, mostly because I liked complaining about things, so that's where I started.
So you go under the pseudonym of Pan. We've just finished our third year of our podcast, taking over from the Sens Underground that ran one of the few podcasts back in the day. So that's when I got started.
I think I started in 2011, mostly starting with GIFs, and then Radic Bonk's Mullet recruited me, and history from there.
My name's Dave. I run the blog Sens Chirp. I became a blogger mostly to pick up women in the beginning. I'll let you know if that ever happens, though. No,
I think you have to let that die now.
Yeah, right. Married. No, I became a blogger because I, in the beginning, I knew some people well-placed in the organization, and I had some unique inside information, and I just
they've
had
all been fired.
Yeah, they're all gone, yeah. I just had a big mouth and wanted to share the information, so that's why I started the blog.
I've blogged for a long time, but not about hockey. But a little more than a year ago, I guest posted on Sens Chirp. Then he stopped returning my calls, so I joined Bonk's Mullet.
So basically, if anybody gives you confidential information about anything, you're just going to start putting it on the internet. That's the answer. Okay, hold on. Here's your actual question is, did you always dream of becoming a Sens Twitter / blogger or podcaster as a young child? And that's from at Gabriel Mari. And you can start, and then we'll open it up to the panel.
To your first question, absolutely. I will tweet and blog anything anybody tells me. Did I always dream of being a blogger? No, I think, but from a young age, I did really have a huge interest in the Ottawa Senators, and I talked about hockey a lot. And I think eventually people just got tired of listening to me, so I had to like find a different outlet to share that information. So that's when the blog started. I wouldn't say I always dreamt of being a blogger necessarily. I used to want to be a sportscaster and I didn't see that coming. I wanted to do the sportscasting thing, and I once went to that audition that the Score would hold, where they went to each city, and I had like a boom goes the dynamite moment up there where I just locked up and couldn't say anything. And that's when I knew blogging was for me. So, keyboard warrior.
The Sens didn't exist when I was a young child. So I've always enjoyed writing and storytelling, and actually, I'm somewhat different. I studied journalism. I know, right? But decided, and I write for Bonk's Mullet, so that's pretty obvious connection. That's going well. I decided early on I didn't want to do sports journalism or anything. I wanted sports to be something that was just purely as a fan. I don't want to make a living doing sports, so that's why it took me so long to get into it. Actually, I just do it because it's fun.
Yeah, I don't think I ever planned on becoming a blogger. I think it just happened when apparently people actually wanted to hear my opinion on Twitter.
Sorry, that's enough from you. But the next question is for you, so that's good. You don't all have to answer. You better have a good answer. Like, if you step in the round robin portion, you better like bring. No, they were totally fine. Like, people looked very straight faced, not offended, and that's good. Okay, Dave, this is from at Me Like Sense, and does your mom get annoyed when you haven't left the basement for days on end?
I live on my own, thank you.
Thank you, Dave. So for Callum, who's now Adnan, do you have any breakout or stellar year predictions for this year? So any predictions for the team, players, or anything like that? Is there anything, hopefully something that we're not all expecting to happen?
Eric Carlson Hart Trophy.
Anybody else have any good predictions for the year? Because we might have some new players coming in, some rookies joining the team. Maybe it's Weirkosh or Hammond not actually falling apart. What's the prediction here? Anybody else but Dave? Anybody? David. Anybody but no.
Well, I don't think Owen would really like this, but I'd probably say Bobby Ryan for Rocket Richard. Maybe not though.
I saw a guy with a Colin Greening jersey walking around earlier. I think Colin Greening will score double-digit goals this year. 10 goals. Wow. 10 goals for Colin Greening.
Now, is he going to be in the AHL for those, though?
Very good. All right, Kevin. You're a GIF guy. You're a visual guy. You put images out there. I think you've even done jersey, like potential jersey redesign. So we had a question from @SenSensei. And it's, how likely are redesigns of the team logo and uniform in the next few seasons? And are they aware of the fan base's wishes? Now, assuming you don't have insider information about that, you actually can't answer those questions. But so I'll just ask you instead, what would you like to see happen with the branding in terms of the jerseys and the logos and those kinds of things? Do you have a preference?
I think the big problem is the organization's gone so deep into using red as their primary color. It's tough for them to cancel out all that work and go back to the original 90s jerseys, but I think that's what they have to do. Just cut out the whole red aspect and just bring back the original black and white jerseys from the 90s. I think that's what the people want. Or if they just want to play it safe, just keep the heritage. I am only pro Centurion if they use the 90s logo.
All right, Joe, what's the most you've ever had to censor yourself on Twitter or on the blog when you're writing something? Obviously, I'm not asking you to... Yeah, I'd actually like to know what you didn't say. But if you can, if you had an example of something you've had to censor yourself from saying.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone reads my stuff or follows me on Twitter, but I don't censor myself much, actually. It hasn't really come up. There was a death threat I was going to level against Chirp, but I toned that one down. But otherwise, it's been pretty unfiltered, actually.
I actually have to censor myself often. And most of the time, it's actually when tweeting with Sens Adnan, actually.
David. That's David. Okay. Do you think that Zibanejad can grow into a top first-line center, or do you believe he's more suited to handle a second-line role? And as a follow-up, to what extent is DJing holding him back?
Listen, a lot of these players have like 3 or 4 kids. DJing once a year, that's not that big of a deal. Apparently we can see how much of a handful kids are these days. But being a first-line center, there's a slight possibility of it happening. One issue with the team, though, is that we have really, really good second-line center potential in Turris and Zibanejad, and I would probably say Lazar as well. So that's going to be a tough way to go. It's possible, but is it probable? Not so much.
I think Zibanejad's sort of an interesting player because I think this past year he had 40-some points, right? And it's kind of hard to tell what his ceiling is as a player and just how, like, is he actually first-line center, like the organization has said on a couple occasions they think he is. He had a really, I got to say something that's like inside information, right? But he had a really weird off-season last year where he wasn't really able to, like, do the usual off-season routine. He couldn't do any cardio work because he had like a scary incident that happened at the end of the season before. So I think that really held him back during the off-season. And I don't think we really know what Zibanejad's ceiling is yet. And I think when you asked the breakout player earlier, I was thinking of Zibanejad because I think he has like 60-point plus potential, and I think we'll see that next year.
We saw him take off a little
bit. Exactly. Exactly. I think once he had some steady line mates with Ryan and Hoffman with him, I think if they can sorry, I know you have some things about Bobby Ryan you would need to work through, but but I just think if that line can stay together for the majority of the season, I think Zibanejad 60 points plus. Yeah.
All right, Chirp, this is coming right back to you. To what extent, if any, have advanced stats changed the way you watch and analyze the game? And then I assume everybody might have something to chirp in here with.
Sorry, what? Never heard of them. Never heard of them. No, I mean, I think on Twitter, I've been really careful with the advanced stats thing because Twitter's sort of in its own world a little bit on that subject, I think. I think there's sort of there's a really strong pro advanced stats movement that originates on Twitter more than anything. It really has changed the way I watch the game because I think I have to at least be aware of advanced stats because it's really easy to say something stupid like Chris Neal is having a hell of a season out there, and then you look at advanced stats and like, no, he's shit, right? Like, it's like that can happen really easily. So I try to use them like to back up opinion more than anything. I find them super boring. I find advanced stats to be really boring in general and a tough way to watch the game. And I think for the people that write about advanced stats or talk about it, the biggest thing that's missing is like the storytelling component that you can sort of weave in advanced stats to storytelling about hockey because the numbers just, they don't do it for me. So
I think we need to clarify the premise of the question. As bloggers, we don't watch the game. Right. That's been made abundantly clear. I watch the games more than I do the advanced stats. I agree with Chirp. I think they're interesting. I think they're more interesting than he does, apparently. But until they find a compelling way to weave it into a story, I think that sports writers who talk about grit and heart and being good in the room, it's still a lot easier to read that than the stats. So I think there's got to be some common ground I don't think we found yet. And you're not going to find it on Bunk's Mullet.
I don't actually watch the games. I just got season tickets so I can watch fans leave 5 minutes early and then enjoy the nice 45-minute exit of the parking lot.
I don't know. I don't know where to go from that. But I think advanced stats have a place, but it's not the be-all and end-all. That's a quantitative analysis of it. I get boring with this.
That's a big word.
Yeah, I know.
For a blogger.
So now it's a quantitative or the numbers analysis of it, but you got to look at the qualitative and just, you know what, just sit back and enjoy the game too.
Well, actually, that didn't answer the question at all. I just want to
answer the question.
Out. So yeah, there's a place for them.
Change the way it's, you have analyzed the game.
It does. It does because I might have a personal biasness against a player or for a player, and that will change when I look at the stats and go, oh, well, he's actually been really, really good in this point, which I didn't notice because of my personal biasness.
All right, hold on. Ladies and gentlemen, Sens Adnan.
The way I think it has changed the way I watch the games the most is it provides a much better summary of how players have done instead of just going by memories of dozens of games throughout the season, some several months ago. And it provides you with a larger sample of things that have actually been recorded. So it is a much better way to judge how a player did than just saying, yeah, he came up clutch in that game last week and he raised his fist and then the crowd cheered and whatever. Chris Neal. But most importantly, it shows that Chris Neal sucks.
Yeah! Whoa. All right. Do we have okay, let's just take a quick census. Chris Neal sucks crowd? Yeah. And Chris Neal is awesome crowd. They like them fights. There it is. And math too, right? I get home, my wife has left me. Okay. All right, pretty simple question here. At Callum Adnan, where do you see the Sens finishing next year? What's your prediction for the team?
Speak up. Okay, I think Tampa Bay is going to win the division.
That's not the Senators.
That is. I'm thinking.
That's the
yes, I think they will finish second in the division because I'm always hope I am misguided in the offseason and far too optimistic, and then I become more bitter as the.
And how far in the playoffs?
They'll lose in the second round to Tampa Bay.
That's a good year. I'll take it.
As hard as it is to say, but I do agree with Adnan. Secondly to say is I think Montreal is probably still in the running for that second spot.
Boo!
But no, I think the wild card would be...
Why do you separate? Separate it.
Yeah. It's hard to argue with a lawyer sometimes, that's all. But no, I would probably say wild card is more than likely the opportunity that we're at. And that also depends in regards to how hurt Ben Bishop actually is, because a goalie coming back from a torn groin is very, very difficult, as we would know with Pascal Leclaire.
I think it'll come down to how healthy Ottawa is. If they can stay healthy, I think they've got a playoff spot locked up. If Anderson goes down, Carlson goes down, gets a bit murkier. As a season ticket holder, though, I hope they make the playoffs. I might have jinxed it, guys, so you can come back and listen to this panel in 6 months.
Yeah, well, predictions are kind of a specialty of mine. I was looking back at old blog posts from four or five years ago, and I once wrote that I thought Nikita Filatov would have a 20-goal, 50-point... I know. A 20-goal, 50-point season for Filatov is what I predicted. And as you know... There's the Sens chirp curse thing. I'm really terrified to make predictions and bet on things because the opposite happens. The opposite always happens. So the opposite always happens. The Senators will miss the playoffs.
Did you guys just applaud the Sens missing the playoffs? Okay. All right. Well, I write for a site that makes jokes, so it's a lot easier to make fun of a bad team, so I'm calling out of the playoffs, too.
Yeah, this is a little messed up. All right, Kevin, is a new downtown arena in LeBreton better?
I live in Canada, so I won't lie. I do enjoy the current location right now. But for the long run, a downtown arena has to happen. At the same time, though, the city has to get their act together around LRT. Without LRT, I don't think a downtown arena is feasible. I don't know how much I trust the city when it comes to LRT. We'll see when it's built.
Now, and with that, too, I don't know how, with where the location that they're stipulating about, will work with any car traffic as well. And the walk-up crowd, guys, it's February, January. It's minus 30 out. No one wants to walk up.
Yes, I don't live in Ottawa. I live in Toronto, but I think they should put it...
Of course he does.
Best city in Canada. Toronto, that is. I think they should put it next to the casino for undisclosed reasons. We're done here.
I think this will be another popular question, and Joe, we'll start with you because I'm sure there's a joke here. If you were GM, dance, get up, up on the table. If you were the GM, it would be frightening. But if that happened, how would you have handled the logjam in goal at the end of the year with Anderson, Leonard, Hammond, and O'Connor? This was Canuck of SCU, so I think a fellow podcaster with Pan.
As both a Sens fan and a humor writer, I was really sad to see Leonard go. I do think he's going to haunt us in the division, and I also will miss all the crazy jokes we can make. But honestly, Hammond was a great story and a feel-good story. I bought the Hammond t-shirt, but I would have found someone to buy high on Hammond and kept going with Anderson and Leonard. And if I couldn't find anyone, I would have sent out Anderson and kept Leonard and Hammond.
Boom! tell a joke. Tough question, and obviously it was a tough situation they were in. I think I would have, I know I, this is usually how I fall on these things, but I would have done exactly what the organization did. Like, I think they had, I mean, Hammond was 21-2. They had to sign him. Letting him walk wasn't an option, right? And I don't think Hammond Leonard was an option either. Because I think Leonard was sort of coming off a rocky season where we didn't really know what he was. I think they made their mind up on Leonard well before Hammond ever.
Don't like European.
Yeah. European. I just think I'm just worried about how many Europeans there are on the team, and I think we should trim the fat a little bit. Okay.
Yeah, I've always been in the camp that the team should have just kept Anderson and Leonard. I like the age gap between the two, where Anderson could have played the next 2-3 years as a starter, and then Leonard would have slid into the starter role. To be honest, I'm still not sold on Hammond. I hope he proves me wrong, but I could see him regressing big time this season. He had a .900 save percentage in the AHL last year. That makes me kind of nervous. There's nothing in his history, but a big season this year would prove me wrong.
Yeah, I was also very, very not happy about Leonard being dealt. And the thing is, when you're going with Anderson, because obviously you're saying that Hammond is a backup, he's 34 years old. If you're going with him, that means that it's time to go for the cup. And looking at the rest of the division, Toronto's just a hellhole. No offense, Adnan, but offense, Adnan. And Buffalo's probably going to be good in the next 2 to 3 years, but maybe not next year. This is the time to go. So who... Is this not the time to start to shore up and get going? And instead of getting draft picks for a young goalie who's probably going to be the next Lundqvist, there's no direction in regards to where this team is.
I used to be a very big Robin Leonard fan, but I wasn't overly disappointed with the trade. They got surprisingly quite a good return. But I was just shocked that they kept Hammond. He's played 20 games, and they decided to commit to him over Robin Leonard. I don't know why.
All right, so yeah, okay. All right. So let's get a pro. So I'm going to say pro, but what I mean is they should have kept that goalie, and I'm going to go through the three of them. Okay. So should they have kept Anderson? Yeah. And should they have kept Leonard? Yeah. Okay. Now you know they can't keep all three, right? Okay. And should they have kept Hammond? You actually cheered for all three. I've watched you. So we've decided nothing. Which actually means it's a perfectly passable decision that was made. Okay. Chirp. That's all I got. Where does this front office, and leave aside the front office, where does this team stand in comparison to other NHL teams, if you know, regarding embracing bloggers?
I think this is all based on 3 years ago because I haven't heard from them since. But 3 years ago, they were very receptive. What they did is they invited all the bloggers in for one game towards the end of the season. I think it was 2 years ago, and gave us all a press pass. Which was really cool. Like, it's not something they had to do, and they were sort of opening the door to bloggers that way. I think I kind of blew it because I was in the locker room trying to stay out of the way and avoid Bruce Garriott kind of tumbling around in there, and he was doing his thing, and I just wanted to stay out of the way, and I stepped in, like, right in the center of the logo in the locker room, which is, like, the worst possible thing you can do. And Chris Neal actually was like, logo! And
I
was,
leadership! And, leadership! 3-year extension!
So I had Chris Neal yelling logo and Matt Karkner like peering around a crowd to look at me. And I haven't been invited back since. I'm not sure what happened.
As much as this is a bloggers panel, so we're bloggers. I think the first thing we all have to do is just agree that bloggers are different things. They, as far as I know, don't reach out much to Bonk's Mullet, and that's probably a good decision on their part. Whether you write for a traditional mainstream publication or a blog or want something that's sort of in between, I think it's more what you're doing. I wouldn't expect them to reach out to us. I think they're foolish if they're not reaching out to groups like Silver 7 Cents, who do legitimate hockey journalism. If they reached out to us, I assume it's to cease and desist order kind of thing on some of the gifts Kevin does. I don't know.
All right. Well, I don't know if this makes sense for you anymore, but it was for Callum. But Adnan, you've been here enough. Aside from moving the stadium, what can be done to replicate the atmosphere at Red Blacks games? And a follow-up, how do you feel the Sens in-game experience compares to other teams in the league? And this is from Jack Daniels and at Canuck of SCU.
I have never been to a CFL game. I never will, so I have no opinion on this.
Okay, but what about compared to other teams in the league? Like, you have an issue with the atmosphere? You're satisfied?
I've only been to games in three cities: Toronto, Washington, and Ottawa. Toronto and Ottawa are pretty similar. Washington, I think, is much better than both of them. Like, it was a weeknight game in November against Ottawa, so it's a pretty meh game for the Capitals, but they had an incredible atmosphere the whole night. They have a guy with a drum, and they're just, the whole night it's going. I don't know how you replicate it. It could just be a different demographic in Ottawa.
More Americans?
more drunk people? I don't know.
I've been to Montreal, Toronto, and Buffalo, and to be honest, I wouldn't put any of those cities ahead of Ottawa in terms of in-game entertainment. They're all around the same. The big advantage I find those stadiums have is their stadiums are much roomier in the concourse. As you know, in a Sens game, when you get in the concourse, that thing is just back-to-back traffic. You cannot move around. So hopefully the new arena fixes that. I actually find Montreal the funniest in that they can go from hating their team to cheering their team. I went to a game a couple years ago, or probably like 6 years ago, and they were booing Kovalev in the first period and the second, and then he scores the shootout winner, and they're cheering him like he's the greatest player in the world.
Yeah, I don't necessarily find that atmosphere is a problem at Senators games. I think it's pretty good. I think one of the problems is because of where the stadium is, people aren't drinking as much pineapple juice as they could be during the game, and I think a lot of people have to drive home, and that sort of keeps the crowd pretty tame most nights. But I think that's the biggest difference between a Red Blacks game and a Senators game is there's just more people driving home from Senators games.
So I'm a Red Blacks season ticket holder. Boo. Boo, liking other sports. Honestly, I won't comment on the game experience stuff because I'm atypical in that way. I don't want a lot of stuff. I want to watch the game. Terrible blogger. Yeah, no. I'm the first part of the question that nobody else answered is what I'll answer if you don't mind, if that's all right. Tension's good for the panel. It's absolutely ridiculous to compare the two sports in terms of fan experience. In football, A, you've got 9 home games as compared to 41. But the other thing is, in football, every single play, which lasts 12 to 15 seconds, has a determined outcome that is either cheer-worthy or not. Right? In every football play, you're either cheering what's happened or you're not. Right, it's not a flowing game like hockey where you need to have, there's moments of, well, I don't know if that's good or not. With football, it's either yay, they got a first down, or boo, they got tackled behind the, like, it's cheering is a lot easier in football. It's a lot easier to know when to cheer in football.
And I've been to, sorry, Owen, I think I've been to about a third of the overall stadiums, just with California and Florida and all over the place, even within Canada. I don't really find that the in-game experience is that much different from city to city. Granted, some of them are a little bit more campy, like Phoenix or Anaheim and things like that, but it's that just seems to be the culture of the Ottawa market, or really the hockey market, is all about the same.
Yeah, I didn't ask myself to chime in, but I will. I'll just say this, like, I've been to every home playoff game that's ever happened in Ottawa, and I don't know that you can beat a playoff experience. There was maybe a little bit of a doldrum when we got so used to kind of advancing or when it was expected, but other than that, basically every playoff game is a 10 out of 10 experience. So, I mean, like, whatever, playoff, like regular season games, whatever, I think the playoff experience is second to none. But that's the fans. I mean, I'm sure the team could do lots of things better, but the fans are awesome. All right. Here we go. This is a kind of attack on to the regular season problems that sometimes come up. And Joe, I'm going to send this to you, so dial in. Would you support limiting tickets to away fans like Tampa Bay does?
Yes.
No.
Good. Good answer. All right, David. Here we go. This is a good question, so everybody prepare your answers accordingly. Who is your least favorite Sens media personality, mainstream media personality? And there was a related question that asked, who is the biggest a-hole in the Sens mainstream media? This is from at James Gordon, who said, I've heard terrible things about at Sens Reporter. So go ahead, pick your least favorite. Yeah, oh, Adnan is ready to go.
Don Brennan.
James Gordon.
They've all been pretty nice to me. Which is surprising. Do you guys remember, this is going to be from back in the day, his name was Kevin Lee. It wasn't you, but he used to write for Hockey Buzz back in the day. That guy was a dick.
I don't, I'll say Mendez just to make it kind of funny. I don't know, I got no answer. Ian's a nice guy, really. I mean,
if you all have Twitter, please tweet James Gordon and tell him his plate is terrible.
Kevin, regarding Melnick and internal budget issues, do you think fans are too quick to forget how rough things were under Bryden?
That is a good one. That's a tough one. Without really knowing, like, Eugene Melnick's financials, it's tough to judge him. At the same time, though, I can understand from a fan perspective, being a cap team usually means you're a better team unless you're the Toronto Maple Leafs. So as a fan, I can't really blame fans for wanting a higher budget and wanting a team to win. As a season ticket holder, I would love for us to spend the cap. More wins equals a higher chance of winning the cup. So I think it's fair for fans to jump on the owner when it comes to spending. But like I said, it's hard to judge without knowing his financials.
I think things have sort of progressed a little bit from the Rod Brydon day. I think we think we're more of an advanced franchise now and that we're more stable and that we're in a little more secure situation. I don't think it's so much as the budget that bugs people. I think it's the way they talk about the budget, the way Melnick and Murray to an extent talk about the budget, the idea that we'll spend when we're ready and we'll spend when the time is right. I think people sort of see through that at this point and understand that the budget is what it is, and the idea when they keep saying that we'll spend when the time is right, I don't think people really buy that as much anymore.
Yeah, to add the chirp, he brings up a good point. When you look at the team now, really the window to win now is within the next 2-3 years. You have Stone, Hoffman, Zibanejad, Turris, all on fantastic contracts. Bobby Ryan, Mark Mathot, they're all over 30. They're only going to get worse soon. Craig Anderson's in his 30s. How many years does he have left? Carlson, you have a budget deal at $6.5 million. You have so many fantastic contracts. You just have to add a few more impact players, and I think this team can actually be one of the best in the East. But the thing is, you need the budget to do that.
I just think one thing, too, is with the budget team, you have to be careful with where you spend your money. And no offense to the gentleman who has bought a Colin Greening jersey, but a dollar saved on Colin Greening is a dollar saved. Not that I know anything about that. But no, it's just, you've got to be real careful with your money and adding in those extra years of contracts just to get the deals done. That's going to add up, and we're looking at that with the Greenings and the Phillips and the Hammonds and the McCulloughs, and there's a lot of those where it's just extending out, and then that creates a backfill. But really, Owen, I'd like to know what your point of view is on that.
I don't think it's appropriate. No, no, no. We don't need to talk about Bobby Ryan. The budget's an interesting thing because for a long time it was actually quite low. But I think now, what's the cap? 72? Is that right? And we're at like 65. We're about the 14th spending team in the league. So I think now we're at a point where if you're going to start directing a little bit of targeted questioning, it might be more towards Murray than Melnick, because that's 14th in the league is pretty respectable for a market the size of Ottawa. And if we're going to compete, that may be the amount we have to spend to do it. So, and I think people have tabulated about maybe $10 million or plus in payroll that is either not in the lineup or is not performing where we want it. So anyways, okay, next question. To Sens Adnan, what's the most annoying issue? This probably isn't appropriate to you because you're a big harper. So we're going to move on. I'm going to ask it to David. Most annoying issue that Sens fans have harped on in the last year?
I can't even remember because it's summer right now. I'd probably say the budget.
Give it to Chirp. He's got one.
I would say this summer, the departure of Eric Condra. I love Eric Condra. He was a super useful player, but I didn't think Twitter was going to survive the Eric Condra departure.
Hey, we have a new guest.
All right, Callum has arrived fresh off his flight. We're going to go through the questions one by one.
Oh, my God.
No, we'll see if you can chime in on one of the remaining questions here, because I think we're down to our last 15 minutes or so. I'm not asking that. all right. Sens Chirp. Oh, no, No, we're passing on that. David, what are the top five things Bobby Ryan brings to the team? And on a scale of 1 to 10, how dreamy are Bobby Ryan's eyes?
Well, you can't get worse than 11, that's for sure. Was it character, grit, being good in the room, or stuff like that? No.
Your answer, man.
Did
the people want to know?
I'm pretty sure you wrote that answer.
I don't think that's right.
But no, it's I don't know. It's Bobby Ryan's a finisher, and that's what he is. And it's kind of hard.
Is he?
He should be. Right. Supposed to be a finisher. But that's just what he is. You know, let's pass on to Kevin.
The one thing I'll say about Bobby Ryan, he is probably the first star player in Ottawa to be this active in the community. It is insane how much he's brought to the community in just a couple of years that he's been here.
Good in the room. Good in the room. All right. Yeah. So Callum, we'll ask you your first question. And this is totally unrelated to the last question. If you had to motivate someone to get in better shape, what would you do? Just like random. I don't know. It could be a friend or just anyone. No?
What would I do?
Yeah, like how would you motivate somebody to get in shape? Like, things
you do? I don't have Bobby Ryan's phone number.
Whoa! But,
what would I do? Well, man, damn.
All right. That was, I don't know, you made it something awkward. Joe, what's the most significant event you've missed or person you have let down because of the Sens, whether it's related to blogging or not? So what's the most significant event you've missed or person you've let down because of the Sens? A Sens or Sens-related event, you know?
That's a hard question.
I don't have an answer to this. I have to question your fan.
You're not a big enough fan to have ignored your family.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just the general ignoring of my family that goes on when I watch every game of the season. But that's more like a collective effect. I don't know if it's a single event. No, I'm going to have to pass the question. I don't know if I got a good answer.
The night before my daughter was born, she was born... The night before, it was the night before. It was November 20th. Remember when, who was it? Clark MacArthur did that really neat between the legs pass to Kyle Turris against Minnesota. So my wife was in the delivery room. But I saw it on my phone, but I couldn't really, like I didn't really experience the moment as much as I could have. But
talking about the birth or their goal?
The goal. I saw the goal.
You're like a hack on Periscope. I was like, there's happening.
Sorry. Yeah. See, my wife had better timing than that because the Sens had lost like 8 or 9 and they'd gone for a skate in Central Park or something like that. Then my daughter was born. Then 11-game win streak. So you're welcome.
Do you have anything to add there?
I've missed many exams in the 1 year university I went to. So
is that at all related to senators, though? In fairness,
no. I did like I.
No, I'm gonna miss those anyway.
With the many afternoon games that we've had to play over the years, thank God for those. I haven't gone to exams for those. That was the year. The 1 year I went to university and never went back for some reason.
What from the crowd? All right. Do we have anyone that would like to ask a question? I'll come out. Any questions for the panel? Going once? Come on. Somebody has a question. I know Feist, you had a question. What's the Alfie question? Hold on. Wait a second. Go ahead.
Okay. So Alfie's been retired for the year. He hasn't been playing.
Louder.
He hasn't been playing. Let's say he decides his back feels great. He wants to make a comeback. He wants to play for Ottawa. What do you guys say?
So what do we say? Yes? Do we do a fat check? What are we doing?
Well, if Alfie's coming back, that Bobby Ryan sure is a dud. Yeah.
That's right. Exactly. Okay, next question.
Answer for him? Next answer.
Oh, next answer for that.
No, you haven't already.
How many players on a team? 21? I'd take him over 22 players on this roster right now, including goalie. I'd let him play goalie, actually.
Yes.
I would say yes. Like, it would come down to a decision between letting Alfie come back or Alex Chainsaw, Alex Chiasson playing on the fourth line. So I think we could find room for him, yeah.
I don't want to anger the crowds. Yes, yes. Ignore the fact that he quit on us.
Oh. There he is. Okay, I know there's one question, but I'm going to let people think of your questions. I'm going to come right back to you. I got one question. I know we got one there, one for you, sir. And no, they're okay. I'll come to them. It'll be okay. Here's the one question, and then we're going to go back to them. Okay. Last season, when did you jump off the Sens bandwagon, and when did you jump back on? And I've clarified this to mean, when did you stop believing there was any chance they'd make the playoffs, and then when did you think, you know, they could make it again?
This comes a very, very short time span. I was at the game that Robin Leonard and Clark MacArthur knocked each other out, and that night I stopped believing, and then what was it, the next game they played the Habs or something like that, and Hammond started a streak, and then I was right back on. So, what, like 24 hours maybe?
I think I was on the tank back in July. But, hey, it was a good draft year. What can I say about that? And, I think it was after the California road trip. It was just like, you know what? These guys are in the position that they can do it.
Yeah, I think same timeline as Calum. I think after that Carolina game, I was really hoping the Sens would call up, say, Frederick Claesson and Chris Weidman, just so we could see what type of defenseman we had the pipeline, especially with so many struggling defensemen in the lineup. And then I agree with Pan. After the California road trip, the hope became real.
I'm usually super positive about the outlook on the Senator. I'm not sure if you guys know that. Go, Sens, go. But I think at like the 50-game mark, I wrote a post that said, we all know they're not going to make the playoffs this year. But I was doing it intentionally because of the Sens chirp curse, right? So I made it happen. But it was at the start of the West Coast road trip, things were pretty grim. But I think Hammond made a save in the final minute against LA in the second game, where I was like, he's just not going to get scored on. So I was back on then.
I was writing most of the weekly previews for Bonk's Mullet, so I was very much of the, it's not going to work out, but this is a really fun ride. But a part of me never really got off the bandwagon, and a part of me still doesn't entirely believe it happened. I'm just mad that Buddy Robinson never got his call up.
Okay, I've been told we actually only have time for these two last questions, so here we go. Sir, what do you have?
Well,
we got a comment on Alfie returning to the game, but we saw Alfie sitting with Murray up at the top with management. What are your thoughts about Alfie entering management?
Great question. Here we go. Right to you, sir. Fire it back down the line.
So to clarify my earlier comment, because Feisty's mad at me, I wouldn't want him back as a player. I think he should and will have a role. I don't know about management. I don't know enough about his hockey sense to judge on management, and it might pollute his legacy more if he's in management and sucks at it. But some sort of like community ambassador, lifelong job that he never actually has to do much, I think I could see something happening for sure.
So I would say from sources I talked to last year, he will absolutely be back, and it's just a matter of time. So he'll take on a role in management when he's ready.
Yeah, you have to figure it's going to happen. Like, there's no other explanation to why he'd be sitting with Brian Murray in the management box. Like, why wouldn't he just be, like, sitting in the crowd like a normal person if he wasn't being groomed for this? He'll be back.
Yeah, I'd probably say something maybe which would be more fitting would be something in the community or a position like that where you just can't fire him for poor management or poor success.
I think I speak for Adnan when I say this. If he's in management and he just keeps bringing in the Swedes, I think we're good. I'd let him have a management position if he just... We should move the team to actually... Let's move it to Oslo, Sweden, and we'll just draft out... Where's that? Oh, Norway! Oh, no! Stockholm! Oslo, Norway.
All right, last question from the floor. There you go, sir. Fire away.
So after what we've seen of the second half of the season, how do you view Dave Cameron as a coach?
Good question. I think it's a decent question. What decision did he have to make?
Yeah, I think during the huge run, he had so many things going well for him. One was the fact that Andrew Hammond played like he was Henrik Lundqvist night in and night out. Second was basically... Everyone that was bad at hockey was either injured or everyone else was making them look like they were crap and pushing them out of the lineup. And plus, I mean, Mark Stone, he just basically did everything. So,
yeah, I think in the similar way, I would consider him to be more lucky than he is good in regards to the fact that, well, everything that Callum just mentioned, but also where the league had to take out Jared Cowan and make that decision for him. If you look back to that beautiful Pittsburgh game. Yeah, just right there. But when, even with the timeout for the tying goal, where Cameron drew up a play and then Clark MacArthur said, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to do this instead. And it worked. Tells you that he's really been more lucky than good.
For the most part, I think I like what Dave Cameron's done. The only disagreement, obviously, his usage of Hoffman. But I think we can't really fully judge him until we get a full season under his belt.
Yeah, I think I was really skeptical of the Cameron hiring when it happened because he sort of had that buddy-buddy relationship with Melnick, and it just looked like another one of Melnick's guys getting like a high-profile position. But it's really hard to compare because Paul McLean was like, he was in full Costanza mode at the end, right? Like he was doing his best to get fired and like doing everything he could. So I, like everybody else has said, Cameron really hasn't been tested. A lot of his lineup decisions were made for him, but you'll have a sense right out of training camp if Neil and Phillips are still the guys on the bench, then you'll know it was for real, and otherwise we'll see.
Better than those clowns in Toronto, am I right? Winning them back. It's been said. I honestly don't think we know. I think until we see more games where he's actually got roster decisions to make, then we'll know. But for now, it's a big question mark.
All right, guys. Thanks for sticking around. I never introduced myself, but I'm Owen at Sens Nation. We do a podcast as well. We do about one episode a year. On account of me having a child, we'll try to do more. But thanks for joining in. I'm going to give the mic back to Kevin. And thanks a lot, Kevin.